Okay, I'd like to call to order the Story County Commissioners Meeting of Monday, May 21st at 1 p.m. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public comment, do we have any public comment on anything that's not on today's agenda? Because we will allow time for that. Gunter?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I wonder if I could be able to speak on the library. Can I view that as part of the budget on the agenda?
We'll have an opportunity for you to speak then, yes, on the library.
For the record, my name is Gunther Prosser, and I'm a resident of the Lockwood River District, and I would like to have this put on the public records in the minutes. I last spoke here in February of 2011, and I would like to readdress the $100,000 Louis Perry Park Community Garden Expansion Project in Lockwood. The people want the existing park fixed up. The county says they have no money to fix up the existing park, but the county is expanding the park to 2 to 3 times its size. Steps taken to push this park expansion project forward are: the River District Coalition Committee, RDCC, held 6 meetings to get residents to volunteer and for input. There was little interest and low turnout, but the county pushed on. Story County and the Community Chest has taken surveys. Only 36 out of 500 surveys were returned, so interest by residents was very low, but the county pushes on. They had sign-up meetings for garden lots with few or no people showing up, but the county pushes on. Having had meetings with 6 Story County officials in the park, they would not look at or listen to the park expansion concerns, but acknowledged that repairs were needed in the existing park, which have not yet been made, but the county pushes on. Story County submitted an interlocal agreement to the Lockwood CGID board at their July 20th meeting, which they turned down 6-0, but the county pushes on. At the next CGID meeting, our county commissioners apologized for his staff for putting forward the Story County interlocal agreement, but the county pushes on. The CGID board voted to turn off the water to the community garden, but the county pushes on. Community Chest asked for residents to volunteer, and they also brought in scouts from Sparks to build the raised garden beds. Volunteer turnout by residents was very low, but the county pushes on. The grand opening for the community garden is still scheduled for June 1st to plant the garden beds, but the county pushes on. We don't know what else we need to do for the Story County Board to get the message that we do not want this park expansion until the existing park is repaired and money is budgeted for maintenance. All this effort, time, labor, grants, donation, and money to expand park needs to be put to expand the park needs to be put into fixing up the existing park, like new baseball field, basketball courts, toilets, playground equipment, planting trees, trash cans, etc., etc. So stop already. Take care of the existing park, but as I all know by now, the county pushes on. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gunter. Any other public comment? Now we'll move on to the consent agenda. And with that, I'd like to move off the consent agenda, special use permit 2012-014. Applicant for the special use permit APN 003-101-66. This is the tower for the Virginia City Highlands.
And also on that, we just have to change the approval of Planning Commission minutes. Instead of May, it should say April 5th, 2012.
So correction.
Also, there's one TriMap today for the consent agenda.
Okay.
Anything else on the consent agenda?
Is that a motion, Bum?
Yes, a motion.
Okay, second on that.
Okay, motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, moving on. Austin, you're up on the special use permit. 2012-014.
Commissioners, at the April 5th Planning Commission meeting, the Planning Commission unanimously approved the monopine cellular telephone tower to be located out in the 1 acres in the Highlands just at the end of Saddleback Row. Just with your permission, just like to provide a brief discussion of what that took place at that meeting, as well as a discussion of the findings, couple of the conditions, approval, and then I'd be available for any questions that may come up regarding that. On said date, the Planning Commission approved it would be an 85-foot monopine tower. A monopine is a term that's used for any cellular telephone tower that is disguised to look like a pine tree. In this case, it would look like a Jeffrey pine or a ponderosa, one of those types of species. It would contain wireless communication, internet, broadband, as well as cellular telephone, and it would serve the area in the Highlands, mainly the 1 acre and the 10 acres with some of the 40s cover. Some of the conditions that came along with that approval, obviously, were the monopine appearance and even specifics relating to how the monopine should look and its maintenance. The Virginia City Property Owners Association for the Virginia City Highlands also was a condition that they would need to provide an architectural review, not for the monopine itself, but for the ancillary facilities like the equipment shelters and fences and, you know, things like that, even as far as grading of the ground to have some kind of an appearance mitigation for impacts. Lighting, noise, and a number of carriers to be located on the tower were also conditioned in the special use. It was important at the Planning Commission that we discussed that the rules and regulations that were discussed during the amateur radio antenna towers do not apply to commercial communications facilities. It's a completely different ballgame. It's regulated differently by the FCC as well as the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that largely applies here. So there's really no synergy or anything that really was similar in the two on how should they or should they not, or how we would approve such a thing. Really, by going through the findings, this pretty much summarizes what the Planning Commissioners discussed in brief, and I'll just very briefly discuss each of the findings that would go with an approval of this. One was that the cellular telephone tower is in accordance with the local, state, and federal laws, as well as the Story County Master Plan for providing service to that area. A special use permit is required under two sections of the code, 1712040 and 1762. The special use permit with the conditions is not in conflict with the estate zone for the VCH1 zone. The findings related to the Telecommunications Act of 1996 are heavily weighted in this, and I'm going to discuss some things in a moment here that kind of go back and do a little backtracking, but summarizing at start. There are some circumstances where there would be federal preemptions to a denial of a cellular communications tower. In that case, it would be if the local jurisdiction or the state of Nevada was inhibiting inter- or intrastate telecommunications services, but the emphasis is without substantial findings. So in this case, a tower can be denied. It just would have to have findings to say the applicant didn't provide substantial mitigation of view sheds or locations or things like that. And the second one is, once you approve the first tower in this case, actually it's not the tower, it'd be the carrier, then there is the doors open for future carriers to come in. If you deny the future carriers, you'd have to make sure that you're not discriminating one carrier against another carrier. You're not inhibiting service to an underserved rural area, meaning if you have one carrier, AT&T, for example, in the Highlands, then actually the Federal Communications Commission requires others to come and try to provide service to that area, so you have a multi-spectrum service to that, what they call a gap in a rural area. The denial of that would have to be based on findings and done in a reasonable time, which in this case would be per the NRS. It's important to note that what we have in front of us here really is a spec tower with carriers that will be located on it. There's an addendum to the list of conditions that would tie the carrier to the tower, meaning the carrier cannot build, cannot even secure a building permit or a special use permit with actually securing rights with a carrier to be located on the tower and to remain on that tower while the tower's in place. By doing that, then all those federal findings come into play. Without the carrier, the federal findings do not come into play, as this would be a spec tower as opposed to a carrier. And the federal law focuses on the carriers. They want carriers. And then this is pretty important, that any decision to approve, deny, or deny with conditions can be based on electromagnetic interference, cell phone tumors, sick things, and you know whatever that is. That's important that the Federal Communications Commission has the ultimate jurisdiction, and then if there was any concerns with that, that has to go directly at the federal level. It can't be part of a local discussion. The applicant in this case, in accordance with the Telecommunications Act, as well as all the case law that goes along with the TCA 1996, that really other counties and jurisdictions that have been faced with what we are, the applicant in this case has demonstrated a good faith effort, quote unquote, to propose a least intrusive design and a least intrusive location. They've worked with Dean Haymore over the last couple of years and looking at five or six different places throughout the Highlands to say, is this absolutely where it should be located or not? And it's based on two things. One is coverage to the local area. Secondly, it's also line of sight communication to Slide Mountain and Peavine, because where they're locating this, there's no ground support for cable and fiber optics. So everything has to go through microwave dishes to those two locations. And the applicant, working with our team, has determined that this is the best location for various reasons. The monopine itself is in accordance with the federal law and the case law that actually uses the phrase the monopine is a substantial effort to abate any impacts that may happen, particularly visual and particularly forest type of neighborhoods. The conditions that we would impose here, as well as the applicant has proposed, is the monopine design, the color of the facility, the design of the facility, the density of the pine tree branches, putting socks over all of the antennas, all different types of things to really make it look like a genuine tree and not like a, you know, a goofy looking Christmas tree sticking out there. Ground disturbances are addressed as far as maintaining visual colors and treatments to the ground, i.e. rocks, to make sure it blends in with the local area. Lighting is below FAA regulations. We're dealing with an 85-foot tower with approximately 5 feet of branches on top of that. It's well below the 200-foot requirement under FAA, so there'll be no lighting. And the special use permit conditions does not allow any other type of lighting except for motion detectors for security that are timed on and off to make sure that they don't remain on. Noise, everything from generators is conditioned with time limits and days of operation and when those can take place. County emergency management equipment will be allowed to be placed on the tower at no cost to the county unless the applicant has to bear any particular costs at his own. Then there would be an agreement between Story County and the applicant on how to address that. And one of the most important things here is going back to that setting. Once you approve a carrier, then other carriers can come. So it's very important that any tower that does go in has more than one carrier capacity. In this particular case, it's four. The conditions of the special use permit say it must be four, and it's encouraged to have more. If they can somehow fit more carriers on this tower with improved technology over the future, we encourage more and more carriers on one tower. You do not have to approve a future tower until this tower fills up. So you won't be boxed in any corner until that happens. And then the rural area is underserved. The TCA recognizes that there is a gap, the TCA meaning the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And then this tower does promote life safety and property enhancing E911 services as well as neighborhood watch services. So there's a benefit there, and also the approval is not based on electromagnetic interference. If a denial was made, all of the findings or one or more of the findings above would be found to be insufficient, and that would be the denial findings. And then before, this is my last part, is if approval was made, I would recommend that we make a recommend or a change to condition number 2 to say, quote unquote, the prior to issuance or assess the special use permit number 2012-014 and any building permit, the applicant shall submit to the Community Development Department proof of a binding contract with at least one commercial wireless carrier to be located on the tower, unquote, and then the rest of the condition. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Austin. Any questions from the commission? Staff? Okay. Do we have any public comment on this? You'd be given 3 minutes to comment on this. This is the monopole tower. Yes. State your name for the record.
Yes, sir.
John Smoker. I live in the Virginia City Highlands. First of all, I'd like to let y'all know that myself and many, many, many customers are behind wanting cell coverage in the Highlands. It's been a desire for quite some time. So it's not that it's not needed or wanted by any means of the manner. There were some questions. I've had over 3 dozen customers call me in the last couple of weeks because of the business I run out there. And how does this work? How does it function? What the hell's going on? You know, just a grillion questions. But anyway, some of them that came down were, did you research other locations that would provide more coverage with a single tower that would have less impact on neighbors? I had a rather long conversation this morning, about an hour and a half, with Robert of Vista Towers, and they did do research in other locations. They just didn't like some of them as much as they liked this one here. This was pretty easy for them to get into. There were other locations that did cover better. They just didn't like it. And I guess that's a personal opinion, vanilla over chocolate or whatever. But in my opinion, and not just mine, but other people who are my customers, they would rather have one tower that covers everyone as opposed to one that covers some and everyone else is just out of luck for now. There is definitely a site up on top of Castle Peak that is available. The landowner there is very, very open to it. Clean line of sight to Peavine, clean line of sight to Slide Mountain, as well as the portions of Reno. So there are other sites out there. I don't think that they have fully reviewed. I would like to see if maybe that could happen somewhere along the way, although we are at kind of the 11:30 time here. Also, it states this is a multi-user tower. Multi-users would infer two or more. Does this company actually have hard contracts with two or more companies ready to go on that? From my understanding, they don't. I could be very wrong. It would be a good question for you to ask Vista Tower. And that's it.
How many users do they have right now, Austin? Do you know?
Right now, Vista Towers has signed a contract with AT&T Wireless, and they're working on possibly Verizon. Verizon is not secured at this point. I have evidence to show that they've secured AT&T, but not actually that it is a completed contract. So I'd recommend, if an approval, that that would be proven to the county before even a special use permit is issued.
Any other public comment on this? Not to entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
I will second with just one caveat that they approved the contract before the special use permit is issued on both AT&T and Verizon.
Two contracts. Okay. I'll make that change.
Okay. Motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Just a clarification, it's just two users. It doesn't have to be specific users. Is that correct, Bob?
Well, they did mention Verizon and AT&T.
I've been working with both of those users, but I just wanted to make sure that if somebody else came in too.
Well, like Sprint or something.
You know, Sprint came in, as are two, you know, reputable users.
Okay. Moving on, discussion, possible action. Final budget hearings for fiscal year ending 2012-2013. Pat,
okay. Austin, if you want to kick that 2-minute timer on, I'm sure I can get this done in 2 minutes. All right. I gave you a staff summary report as well as updated Excel spreadsheets for every department and every fund. I think just kind of walking through these and knowing that I'm going to pause, Mr. Chair, particularly when we hit one or two that I know and can anticipate the public would want to comment on. But the big challenge, obviously, we faced between tentative and final is, as tentative was being published and presented to you, the Department of Taxation dropped ad valorem estimates by another $352,000. As you may recall, at the tentative, we had already had a deficit at that point in time of $215,000 plus. So that put us in a hole well over $500,000. A lot of that is the contingency, and we historically have not relied on our contingency, but you still need it for the what-ifs, you know, that happen out there. We're in using outside contract services for our negotiations that we hadn't anticipated earlier this year. That's expensive. There are just a lot of things that happen during the year that, you know, you've got to have some reliance on contingency. So that meant we really had to sharpen the pencil, and I'm going to thank a couple of people. Actually, I'm going to thank collectively every department head that's out there, and especially a couple of them that made great sacrifices. And then I also want to thank Jesse, who put up with every change. This is definitely the largest amount of changes we have had between the presentation of the tentative and today's final budget hearing as required by statute. So between Jesse and then Hugh cut, I think, almost every budget, including the two primary accounts that I run for you folks, the administrative budget and the commissioner's budget. And it was a long couple of days in a closed-door room going over things, trying to find literally even $200 and $300 and sometimes $500 and $700 just to get this down. I am pleased to tell you that as a result of a number of decisions, the good news is we're presenting to you for your approval today a final deficit, not even net of contingency, of $80,960. And we're maintaining still the 3% contingency at $282,000. So we're basically surplus by about $200,000 net of contingency. The big issues that we had, and that speaks only to the general fund, they'll separate out the fire, 474 Fire District and Chief Hames, as well as the 473. And the water and sewer boards here separately, as we're required to do. The changes that I want to walk you through are basically indicated on the spreadsheets. As you can tell on the total revenues for the general fund, we dropped from $10,978,000 down to $10,624,000, just in that gap between the tentative and the final. Where to find that kind of money and get us to the $80,000 deficit, or a comfort level, if you will, wasn't easy. And the first one I'm going to outline is definitely the hardest. It is, beyond all doubt, probably the most difficult decision I'm making in this recommendation to you for approval of this budget. But that is the elimination of funding for the Story County Public Library. The amount totals a cost savings of $103,967. I previously presented to you, and definitely to the Story County Public Library Board, a memorandum in which I had gone over their biennial report, expressing actually a number of concerns over the effectiveness of the program. When you're trying to find money, and I'm going to outline where else some of these other monies came from, you know, before you start looking anywhere else, you have to start looking, I think, at a return on your investment on your tax dollars. And, you know, while it's up to the Public Library Board, and I want to point out that I believe Jen Chapman was here, Jen is still here, and she serves on the Public Library Board. So they've been a great help to me in asking, you know, questions, layman's questions. The key here is what are we getting for our $103,967 as far as a return? I outlined a couple of what I thought were significant concerns, including the hours of operation. We were paying for, I believe, close to about 45 hours of staff time, roughly. And the library was open on average just over 20 hours, so we had an awful lot of staff time where we weren't available to the public. They participate in a cooperative association known as the CLAN, C-L-A-N. And that was costing $5,000 a year plus postage
to the extent of right around $3,500 according to the biennial. And for every one book that we received in an interlibrary loan program, we lent out five books, essentially telling me that we're a library for other libraries. And we just kind of walked through a number of the research items. And I did, under the authority that you provided me to make proper notifications, I did put the library board on notice of this recommendation. I don't know if Jim's going to want to speak today on behalf of the library board or not. The board did have a special meeting last Tuesday in which they began to address some of their issues should you approve elimination of funding, which is my recommendation. The president of the board did provide an alternative budget in the amount of $44,000. And while I have not given a written response to that, my honest answer is it was a great effort. I wish we could have looked at this probably 2 and even 3 years ago. It did extend hours of operation. But in all honesty, the budget, unless you want to go further into a deficit and essentially wipe out all of the contingency or most of it, there isn't $44,000 to be had. Deborah Loach Griffin also provided an alternative for the library board to consider that she was kind enough to copy me on, and I provided it as part of the public record documents that I gave you today, in which she suggests that the county may want to consider at least $5,000 to support the Klan, while good folks like Chris Miller from the library board work through how we can work with our school district, how we can catalog these. And again, I talked with Jen Chapman. She's provided a letter clearly denoting that she's speaking as a citizen of the county, not as a, not even as a member of the board, much less as a county recorder. And I'm just going to paraphrase a few things from her letter, just in a couple of lines. The library has become more about lending to others than providing resources to county citizens. Not only is it geographically distant from many county citizens, but hours of operation and available resources are minimal. Unfortunately, over time, these issues have diminished the overall value of SCPL to the community that funds it. It is simply too late now. I believe you have a copy of Jen's letter for you, as Vanessa does for the public record. So again, it's with a sad heart, but hopefully it's with good people like Jen Jerogan, Jen Chapman, Chris Miller, Erlene Flanagan, and Pat Baker. I hope I have that one right, or Hunter, excuse me. Not what I'm familiar with, but hopefully, again, folks like that, folks like others that I know are in the room and I'm pretty darn sure are going to speak just on the communications I've received from them. Hopefully, we can all work together to find some type of proper reincarnation for library services in Story County over the next year or however long it takes. As I tried to speak on a conference call at this special meeting, I don't think there's anybody I know of anywhere that wants to see us lose a library in total. But when the budgets are this tight and we're looking at needing to provide essential services, it's my recommendation that we eliminate funding, and that is the result of $103,967 in the community support budget is where those line items show up. So, Mr. Chair, I'll defer to you if you want to solicit public comment on this particular item.
Yeah, let's go ahead and ask for public comment. If you've got comment on this, step up to the podium. You've got 3 minutes. Please state your name.
My name is Patrick Flanagan. I'm a resident of Story County and live in the Virginia City Highlands ranches, and I'm speaking only as a taxpayer, not as any other fund position. The last time I came before the commissioners, I think it was during the fiasco of the Justice of the Peace nomination, and I recommended to the commission that they read Alex de Tocqueville's Democracy in America. So today, instead, I'm recommending to the commission that they read George Orwell's 1984, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, and Fahrenheit 451, which all warn of the repercussions of what is happening here today in the long term. Most of the comments are about the internet. The internet spies upon all of us, Books do not. Books do not spy on anybody. This is the America's version of the Nazi burning of books. Instead, we just cut the money off and control the minds of the voter through the internet. We are walking on very dangerous ground here. In the last 2 years, my property taxes have gone up as my house dropped almost in half in value. Yet, in the last 2 years, my property tax bill has gone up. I don't complain. I don't mind. However, when the policy is to cut county services, which is happening here now on the library, that changes the picture. There's a concept of laying off county employees rather than taking different policies. As a result, county employees now are getting to the point where they're overworked and overtaxed. Something has to be done about this. I'm not even going to question how many firemen we might be losing right now, because that's not open to public purview. I also believe, because this was first informed to the commission of the library last Tuesday, that there's a violation of the open meeting law, particularly when you're cutting down a complete county department. Now, I know you'll argue, oh, this isn't a county department. Well, you approved the budget. So I think it's a violation of the open meeting law. The library has only been open about 28 hours a week, yet the payroll is very substantial for 1.5 people. Yeah.
3 minutes are up. Are you almost done?
A little bit. I'll make it fast. I checked today, and there's people out there looking for librarian jobs in the area of $40,000. That's a substantial cut. Plus, nobody's considered the cost to the school and the loss of the inventory, and that's going to hurt our kids. And
okay. Well,
okay.
I'm going to move on.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other public comment on this? Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. For the record, Story County resident Mark Joseph Phillips. It's Monday, May 21st. 2012, and I'm speaking to the budget, and in particular recommendations to shut down the Story County Public Library. I've had a funny feeling this was going to happen for at least the last 3 years, and who would have thought that I would start attending meetings of the Story County Library Board of Trustees. At first thought, maybe not the most interesting meetings in town, but I had a chance to meet and greet and rub elbows with some of the most important and powerful women in this county. And up until recently, and especially with the school board of trustees, everybody agreed that the Story County Public Library was something that needed to be, and it's just recently that eliminated the entire program has come up. There's been discussion after the fact, and I'd like to thank Jen Chapman and Sheriff Antonoro have assured me that some kind of online services would be available to the public in lieu of losing the library. There's rumor that this county is going to have in the general election a bond issue, and boy, if it comes to voting for a bond with higher taxes, although I'm not a property owner, I might discourage voters from voting for a new bond, that's for sure. And my hat's off to Lucy Baldwin, excellent librarian. Librarians, the qualifications for a librarian are high, very high. When the children of the public are rubbing elbows with a guy like me in the same library, it takes a significant chaperone, somebody that's responsible for the youth of the county. And she's probably worth every penny she's being paid. And I understand that replacing a librarian would cost as much or more. God, it was a sad day. Like David Toll said at the meeting, he was speechless. And I don't know if the commissioners have made up their mind, you know, giving this program the axe. But I'm hoping there's a way to keep something else going. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Any other comment on the library?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Gary Schmidt, and as a matter of introduction, I happen to be a candidate for State Assembly here. I'm here principally as an observer. But a little way of a background, in 1966, I was last employed for a salary, and I went into business for myself beyond that point. And at that time, I retired from Melanix Division of Litton Industries as a computer software design engineer. And I would like to support the first speaker today in regards to the internet. I was working on computers when most people couldn't spell it, and technology is a great aid to us, but it's also a dangerous. I generally support maximum effort to preserve public libraries and books. The satellites or other electronic means cannot determine what you're reading in the privacy of your own home. And it's a broad issue, but it gets into then the monitoring of what books you check out of the library too, but that's another subject. And I just also like to comment that I missed his presentation, but I've seen it before of Gunther Prosser earlier today on your public comments about the second park at Lockwood that nobody in Lockwood wants when the first park is not maintained. It seems like if somebody found the money to build a park not needed or wanted, but you can't find the money to preserve the libraries that are needed and wanted. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment on the library? Not? Do we have any? We want to vote on this separately or just?
No, I think we should do the entire budget unless you wish to discuss library further.
The only thing I'd like to say about the library is, this is my personal observation of being somebody that used to sell a Tandy computer in 1978 out of Radio Shack, and seeing the evolution of today's modern technology from the early 90s of actually working in a large casino building where I could change the temperature of a refrigerated unit at the very end of the building by touching a computer screen, and seeing the evolution go on. And we're fortunate enough to see the evolution, and now to have like my 3-year-old grandson want to play with my tablet. These kids now are born and raised with this technology. So it's here whether we like it or not, those of us that want to embrace the books and such, it's going to change, and I don't see it disappearing altogether, but we're going to have to change with it. There was a point that was brought up earlier about maybe 2 or 3 years ago seeing this, and maybe this is something we should have started 2 or 3 years ago, but this can also be an opportunity, not so much for Commissioner Hess and I, because we're moving on at the end of the year, but for a change for Story County to provide those internet services, maybe access to the e-books, and still throughout the county provide access to books through people like Jen Chapman and continuing that board somehow to do something. I know it's the Story County Library, but, you know, let's face it, down where I live, a lot of people didn't realize there was a library in the high school that was the county library. I think it's fortunate some things we've been able to do over the last so many years to get a community senior center down in Lockwood. We have the senior center up here. We have Community Chest and what they've done. We spread it out countywide so we can definitely have a countywide resource. I'd love to see something like that, maybe even in the firehouse in the Highlands eventually, where they can have access there. And that's something maybe for this for the county to strive towards in the future. So really, I just wanted to throw that out there. And if there's any other comments from the commissioners, we'll,
if not. No, I just, you know, we've gone over the library. This is about the eighth year that I know of doing budgets. The library's always been on the table ever since the internet became so prevalent. And the numbers have dropped off substantially at the library there. We've looked at it, and you know, we've kept it on life support, like I said, for at least 8 years. It's just that it's getting pretty hard to do it now.
Yeah. No, I think, Jen, you pretty much summed it up in your letter to the board today that essentially the way we did business in libraries in the last century was is now pretty much obsolete. All of that research material is obsolete almost as fast as it comes in. There's no way you can keep up encyclopedias and things like that. And it just, to me, it's just a money pit that we're throwing into. And we've looked at a lot of Band-Aid fixes, and I have to agree with the other two commissioners that the library's time has come. And I can't support funding it anymore.
Okay, with that, Mr. Whitten, you want to continue on?
Sure, I'll pick off a couple more here, Mr. Chair, before recess. You know, and again, I want to particularly say out of respect for both Mr. Flanagan and Mr. Phillips, I think their comments were, you know, are very well taken. And in working as best I can with the Public Library Board, and I guess, Pat, to you, I want to be sure you understand, we'll claim this as a department if that's what it is, but the NRS is very clear, and the library board has made it very clear that really 379 says that this county commission, this county's only real area of involvement is funding. So these other items that can and should be addressed, hopefully to find some viable mechanism for delivery of library services in the future, whenever that future may be, really resting people like Jen Chapman, like yourself, and like others, you know, that have an interest in it. I mean, we have a 379 public library board, period. And the county can't get involved truly in what happens with the collection or any other item at this stage. That's up to that library board to decide. That's why I've been relying on people like Ginger Ogan. We had a meeting a week or so back together with Holly, and we talked specifically again about what the county can and can't do. And we have to make sure we don't blur those lines out of respect for the library board and out of compliance with the statute. So. And again, I like Jen and like Ginger and like every other person I've talked to, want to find a way to resurrect this and bring it back in terms of something. And hopefully it's a matter of when, not if. But I think the big thing that has to be determined between now and then is also how. You know, is having one big library right in Virginia City in the high school the right thing? And again, that's not for the commission, and definitely not for me as staff to decide. That's up to people like Jen and Ginger. And also just briefly to address Mr. Phillips' issue or comment on a bond issue from the county governance itself, I would hope I would know there is absolutely no appetite or interest on a bond issue. I've heard rumors that the school may try to reauthorize their bond, not an increase in tax rate, but I'm not on the school board, but the county's not looking at any bond issues at all that I'm aware of. With that, I'll try to hit just a couple other small ones. I want to make sure that when we come back after the 2 o'clock hearing that we definitely talk something. I briefly mentioned the library wasn't the only one to take a $100,000 hit. Mr. Nevin's here, and I made sure that Sheriff Antonio searched him for weapons or clubs beforehand because, you know, for the past several years, we've known of our obligations to try on our roads out there, especially USA Parkway, on road maintenance. And we've tried our hardest to always channel $300,000 a year plus, actually $330,000 between the general fund and the town of Virginia. The town of Virginia went by early because that was we diverted that to help with tourism as recommended by Hugh Gallagher and accepted by the Tourism Commission, Fair and Rec Board. But Mike also didn't have much choice but to give up $100,000 in roads right now, that $300,000 transfer. And he did it in a very gentlemanly-like way. You know, again, just like the library, we're going to try to find money. We're going to try to keep that fund very healthy so that when it comes time for those overlays out there that are our responsibility, we're going to do it. But Mike's road budget is, and our recommendation to you is the general is a transfer will go from $300,000 to $200,000. And then in the administrative budget, there was a provision in there for special grant match, as I recall. And that took a $100,000 hit as well. Those are typically unspecified grants throughout the year, usually the ones that Holly is able to tie into through good support mechanisms like Ron James and others, where there either is a match required. Sherry Nevin and Joe Curtis also do a stellar job at finding money throughout the fiscal year, and we always keep a kind of a grant match in there. There's still a little bit, but it's been reduced by $100,000 as well. So those are the bulk of where it came. And then very briefly, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure when you want to reset. I get about 10 of them.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just hit some of the lighter ones, but they're also very important. Just continuing down the spreadsheet after community services, you see in Vanessa's clerk treasurer's office, we were able to save over $7,000 in benefits. And that's in large part, again, both our sheriff's bargaining unit and our general administrative bargaining unit, and therefore all unrepresented staff, most of your department heads and a few others, and elected officials, we were able to factor in on the dependent coverage. If your spouse is eligible for other dependent coverage and you choose to stay on the county ticket, we're no longer paying 100% of that price, we're paying 50%. And you're seeing the results of cost savings in many of these departments, Vanessa's included, $7,000 there. Holly, last I knew, our total was 60-some-odd.
It's about $63,000.
$63,000. So, you know, we're trying to find it everywhere we can. Pat, I'll tell you, without wanting to enter into a debate with you, that's not my point, but when you're dealing with public collective bargaining in local governments, we could have a whole long talk on this if you like. It's not as simple as you or I would wish as far as changing the benefit structures and plans. You have to get them through the negotiating process, and it's difficult. But that is $63,000 that Holly was very instrumental in. You know, two out of three of our bargaining units were very cooperative in coming to the table and helping us. So
it's interesting that there's a movement starting in the United States on transparency, and that the public will be allowed to sit in on the negotiation.
I'd love to have you there. All right. In the district court, there were just a few small changes, a couple $1,000s. The recorder's office, no change whatsoever. Assessor's office, a slight decrease. Again, Jana and Hugh and Jesse and I sharpened the pencil, and Jana kicked in a little bit more, so small savings of just over $3,000. Community development and Dean's work group, we were able to pare down by about $7,500, and again, that is all within the salary and benefits section. In the planning group within Dean's World, but also under Austin, that went down just a very minor amount. RTC, we're just going to take off the books for next year. We're not using it, haven't for the last several years. In the district attorney's office, no change. Justice of the Peace, again, I want to point that one out. We dropped that radically over the course. If you notice, the current budget at $378,000, we did transfer the bailiff out. That went to $268,000. That's now down to $259,000. So that's a significant drop. IT department, no change. Actually, $300 increase. I don't know where. We increased service supplies by $300. I don't recall why, but very small. Communications, the 911 work group. We're working with Dave on scheduling. trying to find better ways to reduce our overtime and continue to maintain the coverages that we need to keep Dave's clients happy, who are both in this room, the sheriff with the gun, and the fire chief with the big, the heavy equipment. So we're trying to find better ways to control that overtime to keep adequate staffing for the 911 center. And I do want to point out, and again, Pat, I want you to know I read each and every one of your emails. You know, this communications in the county is our 911 center. It's the, in addition to the sheriff's office and fire department, it's the only other department that is open 24/7, 365 a year. You've got to have somebody on that other end of the dispatch line. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean that we're not looking at regional solutions. If we can get all the players together and say, maybe Carson City and Story County and Lyon County and Douglas County can dispatch, you know, collectively out of one center and save on staff. But when you're working with other local governments, it's a long process. So, but that's really where that $786,434 goes. It goes to six full-time dispatchers, one manager, and we'll see if we're going to go with two part-timers. Right, Dave?
Is that all in the sheriff's office?
No, we run our 911 center as a civilian non-sheriff's group. The sheriff is a customer of 911, as is the fire chief, as is our road department and general government. So it's a separate budget within the general fund.
And where is it physically?
Oh, physically, I'm sorry, it's in the jail. It's at the jail site. It's in its own secured area down at the jail.
Well, the jail.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and take a 10-minute break.
Okay. Are you ready? Okay. With that, I'll pick
we'll
up
take a 10-minute recess. We'll be back at 2 o'clock.
Hey.